Hey everybody, welcome to Real Life Sci-Fi with Wade and Willie. I'm Wade.
I'm Willie.
This is a podcast about the paranormal and contemporary mythology. Join us on patreon.com/reallifesci-fi for access to two bonus episodes a week, video feeds, and more. And visit reallifesci-fi.show for all of our crap. Willie Bad Movies is going to just follow Willie Bad Movies because he's going to start doing videos and it's going to be great. Let's welcome aboard the SSRLSF. It's writer, director, comedian, and author of the book Everything I Know About Improv and Some Things I Don't, which you can buy at mattmoeller.com/book. It's our friend Matt Moeller. What up, dog?
Hi. Thanks for having me on the show, gentlemen.
Yeah, good to see you, dude.
Yeah, man.
This is a kind of paranormal podcast. How into that world are you? Do you have, just like in general, are you you know, a tarot card guy? I don't know. Just tell us about you.
Ooh, I'm kind of a highly skeptical sort of individual. I grew up in evangelical Christianity, which sort of had this like rebounding, slingshotting effect on me in my adult years. I became very anti-spiritualism. But I do find use for that sort of thing. I actually have my tarot deck right here. And I like to sometimes, for fun, read tarot at parties as a storytelling exercise.
That's my favorite thing.
What's the art you got on it?
I have two. I have one, which is the Art Nouveau. And then this one, which I got at a secondhand shop, is called the Wild Unknown. It's got a lot of nature-driven art on it.
Is that an important thing about art? I didn't know this about tarot cards.
There's just so many unique ones. Like, I just got this Garbage Pail Kids deck. I'm going like, I should start reading like gross tarot.
Yeah.
Does it tell you how to do it in there?
Well, you know, it gives you some ideas in terms of which cards mean what. This one's the Golden Art Nouveau tarot right here, and it has like gold leaf on it. It's very beautiful.
Nice.
That just looks like what I would picture as a stereotypical tarot card deck. If I was like making a movie, that would be the tarot card I would choose. It's like slightly Mediterranean or whatever, like kind of wispy, you know, does that make sense?
Yeah,
wispy, this like one, the smoke from the candles that you blow out.
I was like, this one's got all the classic Garbage Pail Kids in it for each card. I should just be pulling up a card. I'm going like, oh, I got to figure out some gross spirituality stuff.
Yeah, the Empress is
wait,
a great
so
card.
What are the, what does that just say the Empress though? Or does it say like,
well, yeah, I mean,
say
like
Ellie,
like,
the
there's
ugly
six
empress.
Of wands. It's just like you should just kind of remember who the characters are.
But I it's what is swing and a miss, man. It should be like six of wands in my nose or whatever. And then there's like six wands in someone's nose. Like, so you're a skeptic. That's what you say. But we are going to be the judge of that, because right now we're doing a thing called the Wow Scale.
Wow Scale.
The Wow Scale stands for Wade or Willie. It's a 5-question quiz. At the end of the quiz, I will give you a score anywhere between 0 and 5. If you're more of a 0, you're more of a Wade. If you're more of a 5, you're more of a Willie. You ready to be Wade on the Wow Scale?
Yes. I just want to point out, it sounds like you were saying Wade, as in like measured by how much things are in pounds, on the Wow Scale? Like, wow!
Well, thank you. You've discovered our multi-leveled copywriting on this show.
Did I just point out a pun? Did I just
You pointed out a pun. Yeah.
Oh god, tism hitting hard already, y'all.
Don't beat yourself up. Don't beat yourself up. In fact, I like it when people notice it, because I think a lot, it flies by a lot of people.
Now I'm just waiting for puns everywhere.
No, that's the end of the puns. That's the end.
Okay.
So, first question, 3-parter. Do aliens exist? If so, have they visited Earth? If so, have they visited Earth in the last 300 years?
Oh, man. So I think that given just the random shooting gallery of the universe, I think aliens exist. Mm-hmm. I think it is kind of an inevitability that they exist. Just like, you know, you find sort of like that cave water or whatever, and there's something living in that cave water, and it's been in there for a millennium.
Totally.
Have they been to Earth? I'm going to say no. I think we have yet to be contacted, and I think we may not be contacted. It might be sort of just like two ships passing in the night in terms of like outside civilizations. And I don't even know if it's intelligent life. It might just be slugs.
You know. Yeah. Worms could make a ship, you know,
out of worm casings.
Just a cocoon.
Okay. If I had to design a worm spaceship, I'd probably shape it like a human, right? Because our spaceships are kind of worm. I guess they're more like penguins. I guess our spaceships kind of look like penguins.
Yeah. I think worms are really aerodynamic. But they, from what I know about worms, really love Earth and rocks and ground. So maybe it's just like a big rock, you know, that's kind of floating.
That could be it. Maybe it's the moon. Maybe it's the moon and the worms are the actual aliens who came here on the moon.
That's why there's holes all over it.
Oh, yeah. All right. Second question. Ghosts.
I'm afraid ghosts do not exist. I'm pretty staunch.
This is interesting because you came from evangelical Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of Quiverful?
I'm afraid I haven't.
Okay. All right. Well, that's actually very helpful because Quiverful is like this movement where men are supposed to just have as many babies as possible, turn them into evangelicals, and then take over the government like they have.
What in the... What?
Yeah.
What?
So you haven't heard of it. So I guess that's good for the evangelical community because I was hoping that they all kind of knew about it.
I got out in like 2010, like earlier than that probably, but I was on my way out.
Anybody did doing that's got to be the upper echelon of the church.
Well, Willie, we talked about it a lot. There was a documentary about a guy who was a in vitro doctor, right?
Yeah,
he put the sperm into the women. He would go and jerk off and then come back with his sperm and put it in the woman like she was like it was the donor or whatever. He has all these kids. All these
that guy
kids,
has and they're to all... be like the best poker player, like with a straight face coming back and sweating. Like,
oh, no, dude,
this is from just down the hall.
He was a big guy too, and so he probably was sweating and out of breath when he was done. But I'm kind of glad that you haven't heard of it because I thought it was like maybe a whole thing. Because now there's all this stuff with Project 2025 and stuff, right? And I don't know what we're talking about tonight, but like that's very evangelical based, right?
Yeah.
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 So it's interesting that you don't believe in ghosts because you came up religious and like and you got out, but was there a thing that got you out? Like how did that happen? Because that's brainwashing, right? You're indoctrinated into this thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of behavior modeling and then sort of like when you have other people groupthink and train you. You know, and then you have all these sort of like thought stopping phrases that pop out just at random, just to try and keep you in line with the thought model that's being impressed on you. So a lot of like fantastical creatures or like, you know, mythological ideas are just that, you know, just like ideas and things that we use to try and explain things that are hard to explain or difficult to understand or just like enormous feelings that we're going through, I think. But yeah, like when I was in, like I literally believed everything that was written in the Bible, every single thing, and then just struggled with that belief so hard and trying to like make it part of my everyday life and exist in the world, which does not sort of collide well with that. Yeah.
Right. What's the evangelical view on ghosts? Do they address it?
Ooh, you know, I don't know. I don't think it's really addressed. I know there's a lot of talk of the Holy Spirit, right? And sure. The idea that there is like an incorporealized version of God, you know, running around between and, you know, like the force, basically. But like the idea of ghosts, I mean, I think the closest thing that touched is maybe like A Christmas Carol, which seems very Christian to me because we would always watch it. Like, I think these things touch there at the Victorian era.
Right.
I feel like the Baptist version was if it's a ghost, it's a demon pretending to be a loved one.
Yeah. A temptation.
That's fucked, man, because I was just reading about stories about people who didn't know their loved one died and then they went to visit them. Like this one guy, he had died like the previous night and this nephew or whatever didn't know about it. And he would bring him coffee every morning. So he brought him coffee and he was sitting on his tractor and he just said, just leave it and go or whatever. Doesn't sound like a very demon-y thing to do, right? I mean, thanks for the coffee, sucker. Would be a more demon beetle juicy way to answer. I don't know. All right. Third question. Bigfoot.
I think it's highly unlikely Bigfoot exists. I think we would have encountered a large mammal like that with our clear photos at this time. You know, especially because like big mammals like that size are like you can spot them. Now, if we're talking about like a small insect or like a sea creature that lives at the bottom,
yeah,
because
they're always discovering new like lizards and shit. But,
yeah,
like, okay, every lizard kind of looks the same.
Yeah, it's very lizardy.
The Illuminati.
I think they exist.
Oof. Okay.
A human organization which tries to collaborate to control and create power. Yeah, totally. Are they what we think they are? Some sort of all-encompassing sort of thing that controls space lasers or whatever? I think you were exaggerating.
That's funny because we talked about space lasers on the previous.
Oh.
On the no sci-fi, just that we just recorded. You can find it on patreon.com/reallifesci-fi. Just a dollar for the no. Spend the five and get the more. So that's a yes on Illuminati, and I feel like we're kind of living through it. It is hard to deny the Illuminati.
I think there's definitely something fishy going on.
It's hard not to believe that, dude.
I mean, the whole Epstein thing. Like, come on, something's happening.
Just the whole Ukraine thing, man.
Yeah,
like, what?
That's not cool.
All right, last question. Let's veer away from politics here. The multiverse. Do you believe in the multiverse?
Ooh, man. I'm going to say maybe. Can I get away with a maybe?
Qualify your maybe, and then I'll give you your score accordingly. Yeah,
push me through here. There's this thought that got me into tarot, which is Jungian psychology and the idea of the self. And the thought that maybe there is no true self. Maybe ourselves are experienced in our relationships through other people. Like there is no true way to look at a diamond because there are so many facets that you look through. That's not like one image that you can see ever at any given time. And so because there are so many personalities, there are so many possibilities. I think there is a way in which these possibilities physically manifest themselves, but I also don't think there's any way to know. I don't think we can cross through.
Okay. No, but that's a good, yeah, I would say that's a yes, because I think like you're leaning toward it. The question is not, can we cross multiverses? It's just, do they exist? So I would put you down for a yes, I think.
Yeah, put me down for a yes.
Right. So, the diamond's a great example of if it were true, yes, it's just like the perception of how everything works. We'll never get to, because we'll never see the outside of the diamond.
Yeah.
So you on the wow scale are, I mean, I pushed you into the last one. So I'm going to put you at, like straight down the middle. You're a 2.5.
Ooh.
And I know you say you're a skeptic, but not in this world. You're a little bit more open to things.
I guess it's been a hard journey to try and allow more spirituality into my life. And I also love catchy online tests. So like
I kind of think that's the same for everybody, right? Isn't everybody their whole life just struggling with spirituality? Isn't that the whole thing, really?
Yeah, everybody.
I think it's everyone. It's an existential thing, right? And like, how can you not worry about it? Like, unless you're brain dead.
Yes, or maybe one of those people who only has short-term memory or something, you know?
Man, I think that would be actually pretty cool. If everyone knew that you had it, you would have no obligations.
I mean, you know? I'm so close to it anyway.
The easiest. Like
every time I drive by this Pep Boys down south, I always tell the same story. You know, I stop myself now, but I think at least 6 times.
How good is the story? What's the story?
Oh, it's not good. It's just like, you know, I've brought my car here a few times. One time I was, you know, just the stories of
how an old man story that no one cares about. Like nothing happened.
Yep.
Veer away from those stories. I'm sorry, Matt. Go on.
It's okay. I sincerely hope they memorize it. And then all of them, when you come back in, repeat it to you.
He goes in and tells it to the AutoZone people, the Pep Boys people.
Yeah. And the Pep Boys are like, we thought you'd be back. Yeah. So I have my car. And then I had to, you know, like just like as a chorus of people trying to repeat you.
I won't tell the story, but the story was that they almost tried to rip me off, and then they let me go for free.
I forgot to ask where you're from. Where's this evangelical base that you come from?
I was a child in St. Mary's, Georgia, and then we moved as I was a teenager to Charleston, South Carolina. And then I finished high school in the backwoods of Florida. So the South.
Wow, all the dude. South. What a range. Yeah, the South. Of South.
Yeah. Which was your favorite? Just real quick.
Probably Georgia. I really loved it.
First one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have fond memories of like jumping in, you know, the pool and also like playing out in the heat with the cicadas and the mud. Like I was kind of a wild child. And we went fishing a lot. So
you're like an outdoors type.
I guess.
I don't think we've ever talked to an evangelical. We've talked to a lot of Catholics. We've talked to, you know, all the various stuff, but the evangelicals we've never talked about, I don't think. So I was just curious.
Well, bless your heart.
It's mostly. It's mostly the South, right? I mean, that's where most of them come from. Willie, hit us with the topic.
Tonight on Real Life Sci-Fi, glossolalia, the art of speaking in tongues. Join us as we delve into the mysterious and often misunderstood practice of speaking in tongues. We'll talk about maybe a little of the history, psychology, the spirituality behind this ancient phenomenon, and hear firsthand accounts from our guest who has experienced the power of speaking in tongues. Whether you're a skeptic or a believer, we invite you to open your mind and join us on this fascinating journey into the world of glossolalia tonight on Real Life Sci-Fi.
It's crazy because I have never heard the word glossolalia.
Me neither.
But I've heard of people speaking in tongues and stuff. I just never knew it had a name. Is that just for evangelicals, or do the Southern Baptists go by that name also when they're speaking in tongues?
I've never heard that word before. And
we weren't
Southern Baptists. No, but we were Baptists in Colorado, so it was very liberal.
Was it like snakes and stuff? Like snakes all over?
For me?
Sure. I know it wasn't for Willie. I know it wasn't for Willie.
We never did snakes. Snakes is like a Kentucky, West Virginia thing.
Okay.
I don't know why, but if you go to the Appalachia, you're going to find yourself in like a wood shack with snakes.
Okay. So paint the picture for me here. You're in the South. You go to this church. What does the church look like? Is it a big kind of like church, or so is there a rock church band? Like just paint the whole thing, because I need to know, because it varies so much, you know?
It does. So I mean, the church in Georgia was basically an enormous cinder block structure that sort of had those like pop-in tiles on the roof, and like
sure,
a pretty simple stage and a pretty simple like sound system. And we did, I'm, you know, like a baby of the 90s and, you know, early aughts or whatever. So they had projectors projecting lyrics, and we would stand and sing in pews that were not wooden pews. They were sort of like the half, you know, business center, half movie theater type seats you would have, where it's like so padded and they click together. There was
a joyous environment for the most part, right? Singing and yes. but then just like you're gonna like how fanatical is it, I guess?
I mean, it could get pretty crazy. And it depends too. Like if you're doing like a regular service or whatever, you'll sing, and then they will do the service, and then they'll collect an offering, and then they'll sing again as they do sort of the altar call and be like, hey, if you feel so called today, come to the altar. And that's normally where you get most of your tongues.
Yeah, okay.
You know, in the sort of arc here, the story arc of the emotional manipulation is what I'm going to say. You have sort of like the entryway and things ramp up, and then you increase the excitement and the energy in the song, and then you sort of like mellow out into some more introspective stuff. And then everyone sits, then the pastor talks and has some things and does sort of like a call and response. You know, like you'll have a, can I get an amen? And the people are like, amen. Can I get a this? Can I get a that? You're right. You know, it's sort of influenced by sort of like that, you know, Southern Baptist culture as well. And then you have the get the money. And then it'll be like, if you feel called and you want to think about this, and like if you're feeling very emotional, you go up and have someone put their hands on you and pray for you. Sometimes
just wait, who's the someone?
the elders, the
okay, the guy's in charge, the guy's kind of running the con.
Yeah, basically, like you have the pastor, and then you have like the associate pastors, and then you have the elders, and then you just have like old men, basically, or you know, like no, like seriously, there's like a very
I know, I just can't help but think about the underage women that they're like putting their hands on. Do you just put it on the face? Is that okay?
I was mostly a kid when I was in these, so like,
well, that's what I wanted to ask you just real quick. What age were you when you got out?
I don't remember existing before going to church. Let's go with that. Mm. And then I haven't been to church like on a regular basis since I was 27, 28.
Oh, so it held for a bit.
I had like a weird arc because I was like, yeah, maybe I'm out. And then I went, oh, no, I have to be in. Like, maybe I just, if I believe harder, you know.
Right, right.
And then it just did not take.
So you went up and you had felt the calling to, I don't want to like put you on the spot, but I'm very curious. Can you recreate the tongues?
Yeah, I think I could. So I would probably go up just like whenever I was feeling especially emotional or something was happening in my young life or my young adult life. And I just felt like I had to resolve something, you know, and a lot of that,
which is kind of always at that age, right? I mean, that's like a very tumultuous sort of,
especially part of when life. I'm like a preteen or a teenager, and I'm just like, I'm really struggling with like body dysphoria and like trying to be a person who thinks super literally and has a hard time talking to people.
Like, and the weird support to it also is there's a lot of energy. You get to feel some healing and help without having to explain anything.
I can imagine it feeling like a kind of warm blanket, right? Where you're just like sort of emotionally collapsing in a way.
Yeah.
Like it's the same thing as like going to the middle of the desert and screaming as loud as you can, because you just kind of like don't know what to do with like the energy that's inside of you.
Imagine that, but also there's a live band trying to encourage you to scream. And also, you're not in the middle of the desert during the day. It's at night, so it's dark. So it's harder for you to be perceived if that makes you uncomfortable.
Like even in the church, the lights are kind of dimmed?
Absolutely.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, my. Yeah.
Like a nightclub kind of scenario? Or
sort of. Like a lot of these places that I went to like really try to set the mood for you to be emotional, if that makes any sense.
So this band was just playing emotional music. It feels more like a score than like a rock band, you know?
Yeah. There's actually a specific church out of Australia called Hillsong, which like brings in professional composers to make these songs about how much we have to love and be open with and worship Jesus. And then they disseminate them. It's like a propaganda machine.
Wow. And so they're sort of like sweeping orchestral kind of things or
let's go with like rock, imagine the rock soundtrack
ballad
to a 2004 Disney Channel movie.
Jesus, you're testing me on that. Is it like Jars of Clay? I mean, that must have been something when you were that age.
I listened to that. Yeah. One of the first CDs I had was DC Talk, and the song was called Love is a Verb. And then they're like, and the whole song is about like, hey, you shouldn't have sex. You should wait. Like I was in that culture, purity culture, man.
Yeah. I had some of that too. I had some friends into that, and I witnessed people speaking in tongues and I like Newsboys better than DC Talk, but I saw them a few times.
I think my first concert was Audio Adrenaline.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
These are all kind of coming back to me. I've heard of all of them, but I couldn't name any of them. DC Talk, I totally forgot about that.
Yeah.
Was POD one or not?
Yeah, they were one of those like coming through the back door Christian bands, like Creed, like Switchfoot. Like they had like a CD back when a CD was a thing.
We're not a Christian band, but we're Christians.
Right, right, right. It's like kind of a virtue signal for like, hey, Christians can listen to us, but like we're trying to do this K-rock thing over here. I wanted to ask about the straight edge thing. Was that a part of your scene or not?
I think straight edge is a punk subculture and like punk music I think, touches Christian music at a few places, but they also have like a non-conformity sort of thing that I don't think really jived with Christianity.
It's just a little too aggressive, a little too antagonistic, or
whatever. You would have a Christian band like Skillet or whatever, and they were acceptably nonconformist, if that makes sense.
Yeah, we're comfortable going to the edge, just don't go over the edge.
Yeah.
Did you listen to MXPX? I like them a lot.
Maximum Plan?
Magnified Plan?
Something like that. I listened to them a little bit, yeah. I was into Relient K. Just I can sing every one of their songs probably. So that like emo teen music really hit me hard.
So when it comes to these tongues, all right, so you're going down there and you're like, you know,
yeah,
why does nobody like me? I'm a teen. I'm trying to fit in.
Yeah.
Society's tribal and I'm not getting it.
Yeah. It feels more like if only I change this one thing, and that one thing has to be something I'm asking from God. And so I have to go present myself in front of the congregation as someone who is fundamentally broken and someone who is fundamentally unlovable, because that is the story that Christianity tells us, is that everyone is born a sinner and must change and continuously supplicate and supplant, you know, God. I have pretty strong feelings, if you can't tell.
I feel like you share them here. And like, this is the problem with like talking about religion, because you're in a like kind of different thing than like Catholicism. I'm not trying to like water down Catholicism, but your thing is more potent, right? I mean,
I think Catholicism is sort of a twister of Christian religions, because it's, you know, a lot of standing, sitting, kneeling, get up, stand up, you know, say these lines. You know,
I've been to like 3 Catholic weddings now because my cousin is super Catholic, and I don't know the rules. And I think like as a non-Catholic, I think the rule is just sit there and don't do anything and let the Catholics like get up, kneel, do all that shit.
I went to a Christmas mass with an ex-girlfriend and I had never done the Catholic thing. Get up, stand up, throw your hands up, all the things. And yeah, there was like moments where like, I remember her dad was looking at me going like, you don't have to do this. Like, yeah, we know you're not a Catholic.
And I'm the whole thing. Like, because like, I feel like, I don't know about you, Matt, but Willie and I sort of live our lives on eggshells, just trying not to offend people. And like, so I don't know what the right thing to do is in that scenario. Am I offending them if I do the kneel down thing that they're all doing around me? It's like, should I be the guy standing in the wrong way of the elevator? Is this defiant, or is this, or do you not want me? You know what I mean? So it's just kind of like, I don't know. It's crazy.
No, it's the call of conformity. Yeah.
But can you just, and I don't want to embarrass you.
Yeah.
I would just like to hear
you got
what
it.
These tongues sound like. And what's it called again? Because we keep calling them tongues, but I want to learn this word.
Glossolalia.
This is probably just a sort of French definition of it.
Yeah. Well, it is a French definition because there are people that do it that aren't attached to a religion. So it's like, oh, okay, here's
just like the state of going into a different mind or whatever. And like speaking tongues is called glossolalia.
Yeah. So if you'll allow me, Wade, let me set the mood a little bit.
Can't
here.
Can't wait.
You're in church. You feel bad. Everyone's done the hi, how are you? And then as the music swells, they dim the lights. There's sort of like that moment where you're like, man, what is happening to me? What is going on with my life? And the music swells and you feel something along your neck and head and brain and spine and back, which I now think is just an emotional, like overwhelming, empowering feeling of music and inspiration and just presence.
I don't want to stop your train of thought here, but like, have you ever experienced that without it being in the church? Have you just listened to? Okay,
me too.
So it's a replicatable thing. That's just,
I feel it when I hear the THX sound.
there are definitely a lot of songs that like when I hear I'll I can hair stand up, cry. You know what I mean?
Sure, like, sure. That's the whole thing with The Rock, and we're going to talk about wrestling on the more sci-fi because John Cena just like turned heel. The whole thing with The Rock now is they're like showing
the goosebumps,
and it's like, well, come on, yeah, I can imagine 50,000 people cheering for you is going to give you goosebumps, like regardless of how long you've been doing it, right? It's just funny that they're now focusing on that. This ugly shot of this guy's arm. Yeah. We got a moose on the loose here, so I guess I'm kind of stalling. We're going to talk more about wrestling and the psychology behind wrestling fans on the more sci-fi. So go to patreon.com/reallifesci-fi to hear that, because I've got two kind of like, I know Willie's a kind of wrestling fan. I loved it in the early 90s. I fell out. And Matt, it seems like you're very into it, right?
Yeah, I have two neon signs in my house that I made myself. One of them says Lucha Libre and the other one says pro wrestling in Japanese.
So we're going to talk all about that.
And we've been to a wrestling show together. So,
oh, you guys have.
Yeah.
But anyway, so can I just get a sample of these tongues for my rap album? I'm gonna remix this shit. I'm going to fucking lay it down.
You got to get a sample from Kirk Franklin, too. So it's sort of like got to be in this moment and you have to be very like receptive and open and emotion. And then just you sort of like bounce syllables out of your mouth. So it goes, Dala Sin Talavala, Oh Shandala, Shanditala, Tanahisla, Oh Shanahisla. And you just sort of like get into the.
Yeah, it just sounds like someone making fun of a Muslim.
Well, everyone is definitely like different. You know what I mean? Especially if you've heard.
Right.
But
that sounded like I'm making up a Middle Eastern movie. I'm an actor and they didn't actually phonically spell anything out for me.
Wow. I'm so sorry to the.
No. Listen, I don't think it's appropriation in any way. I just think it's I think it's funny. Because you did sound like you sounded like the guy who pulls the heart out of the guy in Indiana Jones,
the right? Kali Ma guy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just sort of like you take your syllabary, you know, you have your boggle or whatever. You take the letters, and you throw them on the floor. You just kind of repeat that.
Yeah. And so, but you're also, because I would be so self-conscious about it. So like, but you've whipped yourself into such an emotional state that you don't care. It's like, if you're bawling in front of like 50,000 people,
yeah,
like it doesn't matter. I don't care. I'm just doing this.
Yeah.
And do you think that like what's manipulative about that? When you get done with it, what does it feel like? Is it a relief?
There's some more to it. Because if you go up and you're prayed for and you start like doing that and people will like touch you,
right?
Literally, right? You know, and like wherever, like shoulders, hands, arms or whatever. And then some people like will like put their fucking hand on your head. And the sort of expectation there, too, is that you fall down.
Yeah.
You're just overwhelmed with the spirit. It's like a three-parter. Like there's a progression to the amount of like unhinged stuff that is modeled for you that you can then do or feel pressured into doing.
Did you get as far as, I mean, we've all seen the videos online of these guys like throwing people to the ground and stuff, like kind of violently. Was it like that? Or was it more like, I'm going to do a trust fall now?
My regular church was not like that violent. It's sort of like immediacy sort of thing. But we did go to like tent revivals from traveling pastors and preachers who did that, and they would throw sort of like a special event out in the heat where you would get under a circus tent at night and they would like really like hit the band and like lower the lights because you're already out there basically in the dark, so yeah, it was like lanterns and stuff,
right?
And like these pastors would come and like have just a lot of sort of like line people up who were sick and like touch them and they all go, whoa, you know, like you've probably seen it on YouTube. Or whatever.
So you got close to that. You went to places that did that, but your thing was more gentle.
My daily driver was the normal stuff.
The normal stuff. That's funny. Willie, do you have a bunch of things on this that we should get to?
Just one definition used by linguists is the fluid vocalizing of speech-like syllables that lack any readily comprehensible meaning. In some cases, part of the religious practice, some believe it to be like a divine language that the speaker is not aware of.
Yeah.
Right. But no one has ever on record spoken in another language. One thing is like, oh, this is a divine language. It's not real. I mean, it's not real to us. That's one idea. But most people are phonetically within their language that they speak. But let's see. Other religious groups that have done this in some way or another is paganism, shamanism, and mediumistic religious practice. I don't know what that is. In Japan, the Godlight Association believed
that glossolalia, like the access of evil to the evangelicals. It sounds
right,
like
right.
You got totally. Aligning yourself with like the wrong dudes.
You got the pagans, the shamans, and then and the Japanese.
And then the mystics.
There's this Japanese group, the Godlight Association. They were believing that glossolalia could cause people to recall past lives.
Did you experience any of that stuff? Because I am still curious about like when you were doing it, were you concentrating on the next syllable or did you let it go? And like, what were you envisioning? And then what was the ending like? Did it feel good afterward?
There's a couple of different layers to that question that I think are interesting. Generally speaking, you will have one person who kind of models this behavior. And they are the person who most frequently does this, right? And they become sort of like a faux leader because they're revered by other religious people in the church for being sort of like in touch with God's spirit. But the idea is that like, this is the person that we are all modeling ourselves after. Like that's the unspoken thing. And sometimes what will end up happening too is like if a bunch of people do the speaking in tongues thing, someone will be like, I have an interpretation from God. And so it's not just the like we speak gibberish, but someone understands gibberish. That's happened a few times. And I don't know if that's part of the conversation yet, but I think
I think it completely is because I think Willie brought it up where it's like no one's spoken in a different language. But I'm wondering if there's enough footage of any of this shit. If you gave it to some sort of archaeological like linguist. If they could piece it together and be like, this is in fact a different language. Like, doesn't it feel like we would have enough of a study case to like, I don't know who would do that.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the funding would be, but
here's some interesting things about, I have some Bible quotes too that talk about this, but in reference to what you're talking about, there are a couple studies where they like tried to watch people's brain activity while they were speaking in tongues. There's something to this because people that are speaking in tongues, their frontal cortex was used way less. And that part of your brain is what connects to language. So you're like shutting off the connection to language while you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Time out. Oh, you got a new shirt?
Hey, what's Moose.
That Moose.
Can you speak in tongues?
Just say Transformers.
Can you speak in tongues?
What do you mean? La, 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 la.
All right.
Nice.
That's probably just as good.
All right. Good night, bud.
Did you feel the power of religion?
Thank you. Good night.
Can I meet
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Good night.
Good night, Moose.
So anyways, so less frontal cortex being used during speaking tongues.
That kind of makes also, sense though, right?
In the same vein, they also studied some Hindu yogis when they were meditating and found out that when they're meditating, they're using more frontal cortex.
Oh,
so that was a crazy thing. I'm like, oh, geez.
So choose your side because I'm going to go with the yogi, right?
Yeah. I mean,
Well, just when it comes to like introspection and whatever we're talking about, I mean, religion fucking.
But they're using more than regular conversation. That was a thing. Regular conversation.
Oh, more.
So like.
I feel like I can have this conversation with you guys without like really making my frontal cortex, which is the language center, like fire off. Right. But if I'm saying my mantra over and over again, I'm way more focused on what that is. It's I'm not on autopilot when I'm doing that.
I actually got a thought for you, Wade, and it's just a crackpot theory here. You know, if you stare at like a certain color for a long time, right? And then you look away to a white wall, you'll see that white wall as the color that is the opposing color of the one you saw, right? Because like the idea is that your neurons are kind of tired. They haven't been able to reset you know, all their salts and stuff so that you can fire correctly, you've tired them out. I wonder if there's a similar sort of thing at play here with the linguistics of saying a word over and over until it becomes very tired in your mind and it turns into just sort of sounds, and that pathway ends up sort of like firing itself out for a while. And so it makes other things easier by comparison to fire.
Meaning, like, because meditation is to fire a different part of your brain to sort of like figure out what's going on with you, right? It's like self-therapy or whatever.
Maybe, so
like,
yeah,
that's interesting. That's interesting.
Does the frontal cortex also deal with receiving a message? You know, that's the question.
Does it?
Because, like, does it? If you were speaking in tongues and it was a divine language, then you better be listening.
The thought process that I'm familiar with is that when you're speaking in tongues, you, the person, are not speaking with God. You are serving as a conduit for God's voice.
It was like
voice.
A channel. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the message. You don't have to listen because you're saying the message.
Exactly.
When you're done, does it feel good or is it like a stress headache?
It depends. But it can be very peaceful, like sort of like a meditation at the end of a hard workout, right? You're sort of like you expended a lot of energy, in this case, like emotional energy. And so you have sort of like this catharsis, this sort of like, you know, come down moment, if you will. And generally speaking, it's at the end of the service and they're like, we're going to leave the lights dim for people who have, you know, experienced this moment. And like you just kind of like. So that if you went through all the steps where you like have your hands out and you're speaking in tongues and then someone puts their hands on you and you fall down, you're laying on the ground, just sort of like laying at the front of the church for, you know, a few minutes until you gather your wits and leave. Like it's very interesting.
But does it feel like something that you want to recreate? Is it addictive?
I don't know if it's addictive, but I think it is nice. Like there's parts of it which I do in different activities now on my own.
Yeah.
Just to like there's a boxing class I take that at the end we do a couple of poses and then they turn the lights off and you're supposed to be in, you know, a corpse pose, you know, for a few moments. And that, and that
you
feels
start,
sort of like
you
it.
Start speaking in tongues and they go, I'm sorry, you're not allowed to take this class anymore. Well, but Willie, I think what Willie is saying is like these things could theoretically mean something, right?
Yeah, that's
the idea. And I don't like, just want to do the side of it where it's like nonsense or whatever. So, like, what's the more kind of like supportive thing?
I've seen a bunch of different versions of people channeling aliens, alien entities.
That's something, Matt. I don't know. Like we've talked to like star seeds and stuff like that. And star seeds are people who have they're like hybrid alien people, humans. I mean, and the interesting thing about it is it all kind of like comes from the same place, right? Of like when we interviewed the starseed who was speaking in tongues, we didn't jazz her up. We didn't like play some fucking sad song or whatever. She got into it. But like, it's kind of the
her
same
voice
thing, right?
Change, her accent changed.
And who knows if it was an act or not, but it's like, why does this keep coming up? Like, why is this a thing?
But at some point in the same vein, it's just like, and here's the thing, I receiving a signal when we don't actually know what kind of radio we are, what kind of signal is possible to intercept. Like
exactly. It's like, I feel like it's kind of like schizophrenia in a way where it's like, how can you trust where these messages are coming from when you don't actually understand what you're doing? Right. Like, let's say that you are talking in tongues and you're speaking to something that you don't understand. And they're speaking back through you through those tongues or whatever. Couldn't that be a demon? Couldn't that be like, you know, a fucking.
Yeah, because like one of the most compelling things I found while I was trying to research this was this person who was exorcising a demon out of somebody. And he was just talking about how like there was this moment where this woman was saying crazy things and she stopped and looked at him right in the eyes and said like, she's mine. And just the weird
like basic poltergeist shit.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, just like,
but their description was take away the religion. One of the biggest description was this is just a mental breakdown. So when your brain is disconnecting from yourself. How much, like, picture someone that has, you know, doesn't have the short-term memory, you know, there's a great movie with Guy Pearce. That's one day. What if it was even shorter? And so everything you say actually doesn't connect to anything. You don't remember what the connection is to. Like, what is this stuff spewing out? You got the old man telling the same story every day, doesn't know that everyone's heard it.
Yeah, about almost getting scammed.
That's the same. Like, the old man telling the same story is speaking in tongues.
Yes. One of the things that fascinates me the most probably in the universe right now is an idea of a mirror neuron. Which is, it's the thing that there's like this set of neurons in your prefrontal cortex, which are dedicated only to trying to understand others by mirroring what we perceive them to be. And so this is the place in your mind where you create mental models and maps of the people in your life you love and interact with. And I wonder sometimes... by the way, the reason I know about this is because my improv book, I'm like, what is group mind? How do we have group mind? What the hell is that?
Interesting.
Yeah. And I think it's a contextual mental model we're making in our own minds of the people around us that are important to us. And I wonder if all those neurons just sort of like fired at the same time, would it come out as sort of like this replicated gibberish of the people who are with us in our minds?
We all have the same working thing happening. Can we all mirror each other in a way that it is one group mind meld? That's fascinating.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff.
Wait, do you take that to the nth degree and then be like the prominent kind of theory on like reincarnation or whatever is that we're all the same person and we're just living these lives? Do you take it that far, or are you just saying it as like a? It's an interesting exercise in conformity.
I don't take it that far because I'm a constructivist. I believe that the meat is the thing. So unfortunately, because your brain meat and my brain meat aren't touching, they can't be the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty rudimentary. But the models you make in your mind of other people is like, it's them to you. This is the reality. So, I mean, if you see ghosts, maybe that's your mirror neurons, just like having that person you need to speak with presented.
Well,
does that
dip into like the NPC main character stuff or not? I'm trying to figure out like when you're on the same brainwave with.
I love brain length.
Oh, look at Mr. Longbrain over there.
Man, no one's going to like me. I got such a short brain.
You should go to church and pray for a longer brain.
Like, I'm just wondering, when it comes to improv and connecting to people in that way,
yeah,
do you put more spirituality into it, or do you, or is it just, because you said they're models of people. And that's why I thought of like the NPC things. Right. Hmm. So, but like, if we're in an improv group, am I improving with like what I think you are, or are you your own individual guy? You know what I mean?
It's a little of both.
How does it work?
So my main, have you heard of the acronym REPL, REPL? It's a programming term.
I have not.
Stands for read, evaluate, print, loop. So if you're on a command line and you type a command, it will, and you hit enter, the system will evaluate that, print the effects of it, and then loop back to reading in more information from you. When you're doing improv, the REPL is OAR, observe, assume, respond. The observations are everything that comes in through your eyeballs and in through your ear holes and in through your nostrils and mouth and tactile, and everything inside as well. All of your thoughts, all of your contexts, all of your experiences, and your mirror neurons, which like occupy a large percentage of like how you are experiencing the other human being on the stage with you. That is everything that you're observing. You create assumptions based on that, and then you respond by presenting the new information based on your observations and assumptions.
So you're looking at it in a very sort of mathematical way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
which is cool because it works. And if you can train yourself to act in that way, then improv is better for you. and being a part of a group.
I just don't think there's anything that fires your neurons a little bit more than like walking into a scenario. Oh, shit. My cat's about to have a hairball. I caught it. She shot it really far, dude. But like, I had my baseball glove and I was just standing there and I caught it. No, I got her off the couch. All I needed was for her to get off the couch.
I thought you were for real, Wade. I was like, I mean, you sold that. I was like,
No.
Yeah, dang.
Jesus. I mean, it's a lot to think about, this stuff. Is it real? Is it not? Does it matter? Does it help people? In the same way that meditating like helps people, is speaking in tongues helping people? And like, if that's the case, then who am I to look at them and be like, that's crazy? You know, like, yeah. I don't give a shit, dude.
I want to argue with you, if that's okay. I think emotional release is necessary. Like, as human beings, we got to get our feelings out one way or the other. But if someone wants to like make a space for you to release your emotions and then manipulate you based on that, I think that's abuse.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my biggest complaint when the first time I ever saw it, I was so turned off because I've been in that situation. I grew up in the church and I was always in that situation. I remember one time I felt like I needed some help and I went up front and my youth pastor was like, you've already been baptized. Like, you don't need help. You know, it's like, this is for like people that aren't, this is for, you know, whatever, that haven't been helped yet. At any rate, I went to this big rock and roll church, music playing, and people that needed help were going up. And those are usually like guests of people. Everyone was reaching out, speaking in tongues. And I was just going like, oh my God, you mean this whole church of people is ready to save everyone? Like, it really like rocked me in the wrong way. I was so mad. But then in the same...
How do you mean? Just by willing to save everyone?
Just, what does that mean? Just the idea that they felt like they were already in a good place to where, I'll help everyone that needs help.
That's how I think what it comes down to. Like, I don't know if it's Gen X or what, but like, dude, I just don't trust anybody in charge. And like, if you tell me I got to fucking like chant some shit, I'm going to be like, no, I don't. Like, fuck off. I'm not doing that. And it's not going to help me. And like, I'm going to figure out what I want to do. So my question about like that you answered with like the abuse thing is like so valid, but like, do you not think anyone's getting anything out of it?
I think someone is getting something out of it for sure.
Do you think it's misguided or do you think that they're on the right track? And I know that's a loaded question because you're so anti that whole thing. Could that be a right track thing? Like, could speaking in tongues be like an enlightenment kind of thing, you know?
I don't move. I think any avenue which creates curiosity and kindness and a potential for equity is a good thing, even if it is like technically a bad thing, if that makes sense. I also feel like a lot of these mega churches where it is mostly about the presentation, the feeling, the emotional manipulation, the look, if you will, of being in versus being out. I think those things are, in general, harmful. I would much rather go to a church that has one wooden pew and one small podium with a person who just reads the scripture text, and then everyone goes outside and like cleans the streets and like helps people cross the road, or like, you know, like feed someone who is hungry, or like has a hard conversation with someone.
After school program, and there are that. I mean, there are good communities of churches who do that stuff, right? But like, really, we're diving into the whole like, this guy has a fucking helicopter for some reason, you know?
Really, don't think there could be any reason why that would be useful.
Yeah, and how do people keep falling for it? Like, why is this guy able to? Well, I'm getting really into the.
I know,
big,
but
the big dudes now, but
if you, whether you feel guilt or not, to have the release and to have the mental, because I know that we're very polarized politically, but picture different religions, different politics, different everything. You can't even talk to your family members. You know, people are asking questions online and be like, well, how are you still friends with your family? And it's like, dude, at the end of the day, whether you're talking to your family or not, everybody needs some kind of support system. And so Yeah, I know, dude. If someone's making money off of you feeling that support, that fucking blows. But I feel like, could you get that without it being attached to a church? Is there some sort of like...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, that's all we're looking for. New
age healing that is not...
It's not even about that. Money. Here's what I think it is. Really, if you want to boil it down, here's what I think it is. I think like the culture war of religion has stalled. I think if I'm playing Civilization 6, right... I'm going like, okay, the borders are set. I've installed my religion. Now it's hard for these people to like change my religion. So what's next after that? Like, well, fucking class war, right? So like, because the people in charge need to have you upset at someone else so that you'll keep giving them money, or not even upset at someone else, just upset at your life, right? And so when it comes to like, and I'm not talking about the like super devout, like people who are like devoting their lives to religion. I'm just talking about like the whole religious war seems like 100 years ago war. And now we're getting into what really matters, which is like the money shit. Like we've been divided up by religion. That's great for these people in power because they can easily say, well, this religion fucking thinks this. And they're like the devil. They're the opposite of your religion. So you buy into that cult of personality thing and it becomes about money and it gets eroded and this motherfucker has a private jet, but that's makes sense because he needs to like be on the front lines of this war, but he's just stealing money from your back pocket, you know. Yeah. He's just like taking it from you. And it's a distraction thing. It's like, look over here. Look over here. You're not a good Christian. You're going to go to hell.
I think a lot of it can be explained by the prosperity message, the prosperity doctrine within certain aspects of Christianity, which says God wants to bless you, which is why I have a private jet and I'm blessed. Give money to God's institution and God, the invisible force, will return it to you.
Yeah. And it's the same playbook as like politicians who are going like, if you vote for me, you'll have more money. Right. It just... It kind of all like at this point has devolved into like who has the most money. I don't know that religion is a thing anymore. It just feels like a countryless border, right? It's like, okay, Christianity's got like the Western.
Wade, when was the last time you drove through Alabama?
I know, dude. I mean, the thing is we're so disconnected, but I still think that in the realm of politics, anybody who blames Trump for a lot of stuff, I'm like, you got to blame the religious right that's like paying him propping to him do up, this yeah. shit. And I'm like,
why Alabama? Like, what do you mean?
Just a cursory 10-15 minute drive through the South is going to expose you to a lot more churches, a lot more people who are impoverished but firmly believe that they will not be, and also just like a ton of billboards. I know it sounds weird, but I feel like you can really figure out what a place is by the billboards, but what people are trying to be bought and sold idea-wise.
It's interesting, though, because like you come to L.A. and the billboards are like, go see this movie, consumers and consumerism. But that, in the insurance. South, they're like, go to this church and like give us your money.
Yeah, but it's also movies, insurance, and navel-gazing in this town. Let's be real. Like everybody who is too good for their hometown moved here, and half of those people are not too good for their hometown. Why do you think I came here? I thought it was hot shit.
Fuck. I mean, we got to wrap it up, but that's a whole other thing, right? I mean, that's now you're getting into like, what is life really? I mean, if you discard religion and you discard money, like, what is life?
It's a desperate search to belong.
Yeah.
And I think people who speak in tongues, in my opinion, are doing everything in their ability to belong to something that they feel a deep connection with, that they feel safe in. But, you know, who knows if that kind of trust is going to be misplaced.
I will say, if you are ever in a situation that you don't want to be in, just speak in tongues.
How many dates have you gotten out that way, Willie?
Oh my God. Just can like, you imagine?
You know, before you, you know, had a family, you know, he's like, this date's going bad.
Yeah.
Kamada, Hamada,
Oh, Wade's got the spirit. Wade's got the spirit.
Kamada, hamada.
Put your hands on Wade. Kamada.
I'm going to cover your lunch, bro. My chants
are a lot like Joe Pesci's cusses in Home Alone. I just go, friggin'
It's the original speaking in tongues is the upset dad that like is mad at the world.
Ding. Friggin'
It's interesting. It's all interesting. And yeah, who knows? Dude, thank you, Matt, for like sharing all this stuff, because I feel like as an outsider, it's just good to know that like this is kind of what's happening. What I thought was happening is happening, right? And you got out and that's cool. And like, God damn it. I hope I don't sound like a fucking Satanist. Well, I don't care if I sound like a Satanist.
In the same vein, though, like if you were still in it, I think it would have been a little harder to talk about.
Oh,
from our sprint, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it would have been super defensive, right? I mean, like if we talked to you when you were like 15 or however old you were, like outside of the normal angst of a 15-year-old, you would have been completely fucking stonewalling us, probably, right?
I was great at arguing with people, and I knew a lot of Bible verses, and I knew a lot of like logical arguments. Like, you want to talk about like gamble? What's his name? There's like a famous mathematician that's like, if God does exist, why don't you, you know, accept him as your Lord and Savior? But if he doesn't, like, what do you lose? You're still just dead.
So, yeah.
Pascal's wager. That's what it is.
Yeah. My favorite thing was, hey, man, the God built the world in 6 days, but they didn't ever said how long a day was.
Yep. A creationist's argument. I had that too.
I just like the whole thing about like, hey, we made up this book and now it's true. Like, we've taken the amount of time. So we wrote this book and now it's been 200 years and we've solidified that it's true. We're just telling everyone that it's true.
Add a zero there, Wade.
Huh?
You said 200. It's been 2000 years.
Well, OK, but yeah, but it would only really take. I mean, look at what's happening in our democracy. It took a month. I mean, it took four years, maybe. I don't know what it took. But all I'm saying is, like, can you imagine that amount of power over 200? Much less 2000 years. Like, of course people are going like, yeah, this is real. And these are the things. But for me, it's like, you just wrote a comic book and now you're telling me that this is the way life is. Like, fuck, that's not real. None of that's real. I'm sorry. I went too far, but like, because this isn't about religion or anything, everything that I've heard tonight does not make me think that speaking in tongues has any benefit. And that's where I will leave you.
Right. And I would say that it's interesting to have less frontal cortex while speaking in tongues. And it makes me go like, well, picture hanging out in nature where there's just something that happens that you can't explain that we all kind of need. And like, I'm not trying to say you should speak in tongues, but I'm like, I think that we do need to disconnect from our brain a little more in different ways, whatever that is to you. And speaking in tongues is not the answer, but I'm going like, yeah, you know, like we need to experience some silence.
I think speaking in tongues could be the answer if you came at it from a different position.
I have a suggestion here. When you're making a neural network, right? Sometimes what happens is you overtrain the model on your data set. And this is why in some like AI image detectors previously, it was hard for them to figure out what a penguin looked like, because all of the penguin pictures they had been trained on, the penguin was on snow, on ice with a white background. And then they saw a penguin at like SeaWorld, like on the concrete or whatever, and it went, what the hell is this? The model was overtrained based on its training data. And if we shake up the etch-a-sketch of our neural networks in our brains sometimes, we can find better optimizations. We can find better ways of being, I think.
You need to create a digital meditation class.
I don't know that you need to. Willie's answer to everything is say more shit and put more shit out there. I don't think that's the case, man. Like, I don't care about saving anyone. Like, I understand what I'm thinking. I feel like we've all been through like journeys of our own psyche, right? And so like, there's nothing you can put on YouTube that's going to make people understand like, oh, it doesn't matter. Like, when you're in high school, that's the only thing that fucking matters, dude, is like being cool because of this tribalism thing, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I don't know. This whole 100%. thing,
Yeah,
I'm sorry. I'm totally on board
with you. I'm always just like, oh man, wouldn't it be cool if this existed when I was searching for it?
Yeah, it would be great. It would be great, and if it was pure, and if you connected to it, like even if it's manipulative and they're like throwing shit at you, like if you're happy with it, like fuck, man, I don't know.
If you want to be part of a tribe, if you want your emotions manipulated, if you want to see a spectacle, I have a tribe for you. It's called the Tribe of Pro Wrestling.
All right, and we will leave it there. And I think that's the best. Oh, but I wanted to ask about you're currently editing your short, and it's coming out when and where and like what can you tell us?
We're in post production. It's a horror short film. It's called Call 154. The premise is there's this woman who keeps getting a call every night from another version of herself, like a multiverse version, and cool. That version is being chased by an eldritch horror, and she has to walk her other self through how to escape on the phone. It's
did
very
you say
scary. An
eldritch
horror.
I understand horror. What's the horror. Extra? What is that? What are you saying?
I'm emphasizing it. I'm speaking in the tongue of horror.
And okay, well, that sounds great. How long is it?
Right now, TRT is about 11 minutes. We're working on picture lock this week. Should be
sweet
the lock.
Spot, dude. Sweet spot. Yeah. I love 11 minutes.
Thanks.
I love 11 minutes.
And then we
that's great. And you're gonna try and put it in festivals and stuff, and then it'll be online after that.
Most likely, looking for a good festival run. Thinking about making like a little horror short anthology. You know, this one is one human, one location. And I have something written already that's like two humans, one location. So I'm like, okay.
Fucking perfect. Cheap productions. You only got to feed like one or two people. You know?
I'm looking to be economical and increase the difficulty as time
goes
on.
Hey, the fucking guy who just won all the Oscars last night shot his first movie on a fucking iPhone. So,
well, yeah, I have an iPhone.
Exactly. So I think that goes with Willie's, just like create some shit, right? I don't think that should be the thesis of this, but I will back up Willie's ever optimistic view of the creativity in society. So anyway, go to mattmoeller.com and eventually you'll have the link out there and stuff like that. Thank you everyone for listening. Remember, go to patreon.com/reallifesci-fi. We're going to continue the conversation over there. We're going to talk about the psychology of wrestling fans. I can't wait to crack into these nuts.
Yeah.
These like weird nuts who are like into this shit.
We're going to start with the big heel turn of John Cena that just happened.
Oh, very timely.
If you know, then you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
And remember that just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not after you. Matt, thanks again for being here, dude.
Thanks for the invitation. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, dude.
Bye.
Bye.